You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
It's the Cooligans, stupid.
I hope everyone is enjoying their Labor Day.
Yeah, this isn't the way I wanted to celebrate Labor Day.
But Christian, when you were planning out your Labor Day,
as I do, yeah, how months in advance.
How close would you say this Labor Day is to your plan?
Okay, it's you know what, the trajectory is just a little bit off. I really didn't nail it the way I usually have year in and year out.
Just don't get into sports gambling, buddy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
Okay, today's a special episode. It is we're taping this on Labor Day. This intro. But this is a special interview that we did a couple weeks ago at MLS All-Star with a man. If you do not know him yet, you will now. Lutz Pfannenstiel, sporting director for St. Louis City SC. The guy has one of the most fascinating careers you will ever hear about. And we talked to him. But before we get to that interview, I do want to say a couple things. Just simply thank you to a lot of folks who reached out. Yes, my father did pass away a little under 2 weeks ago, and it was a shock. It was very sudden. We'll talk about it more in a little bit more detail because I don't know, some people want to know just how I'm doing, and we'll talk about that more tomorrow on the live episode that we record on YouTube. Yeah, I just want to say thank you to all the folks who reached out. I mean, fans of the show, other people
in the soccer world, soccer
media, yeah. Players. A lot of players reached out to me, and that was super kind. It's one of those things where you don't even realize who knows you exist and who cares, and the fact that so many people took the time out to send a kind message, everyone from Meadowlark as well, the kindness was incredible, from sending flowers to sending messages. I'm very, very grateful. My family's very grateful. It's crazy. It's just crazy. And it's been a wildly difficult and emotional 2 weeks. And we figure out how to move forward. That's pretty much all I can really say. But I just wanted to make sure I got that out there before today's episode, because a couple of people were curious.
Yeah. And I do want to say, though, from my part, just watching the outpouring of support. Christian's gotten, I mean, at the end of the day, I think, we talked about this a little bit when we were on stage in Minnesota. When we started Cooligans, we thought, wow, this will be something we'll enjoy, and you would hope that you surround yourself with audience members or fans or supporters, whatever you want to call them, that, are like-minded or, caring individuals, people that just are here to have fun and have a good time, but also care about the sport and care about the people around it. And to see that community come together, the messages that I received asking how you were, the messages that I received from, Meadowlark employees, our coworkers, obviously, people from around the soccer world, people that we haven't spoken to in years. Our Patreon is just absolutely incredible. Gully Squad is a wonderful group. They jump to support so many causes in this world and always try to make a positive change. And then seeing how they reacted to one of us going through something so difficult has been, for me, just kind of a bit inspiring. It just goes to show that it's got nothing to do with me and you. It's just that we found a group of people that are great And we've surrounded ourselves with a group of people that were great. And of all the people that reached out, try to figure out how to support you and try to figure out how to be emotionally there for you or just show a little bit of love during a very, very difficult time for you. And just messaging me to make sure that you're good because, you know, you weren't very vocal on social media for some reason. I don't know why. You really took a break. No, like for obvious reasons.
No. I wanted to do some Real Housewives recaps.
Yeah. I haven't seen you dance on TikTok in a few days. I don't know what's stopping you. No, but honestly, like, you know, you obviously disappear from social media as one does when something really difficult is happening. You know, you sort of focus on time with your family and whatnot. And, you know, people were reaching out to me to make sure you were good and if there was other ways to support. And honestly, it was people that I didn't even realize we had impacted in a way or made a relationship with enough where they would reach out in a time like this. And it just goes to show that a couple of things I just want to say. One, thank you to the fans. Thank you to all of our friends. Thank you to everyone on the Patreon and Gully Squad. You guys are absolutely just it sucks to say this, but it feels like we don't deserve having people like you around us. Shouts to all the players and all the social, you know, all the sports media people that reached out.
Comedians as well. Yeah. The comedy world.
I was about to say, comedy people are just, we're always, you know what I mean? We're always there for each other when bad things happen. But to see it from the outside perspective was absolutely cool. And I also just want to give a thank you to, you know, anyone who might have reached out and wanted to support and want to help in any way, shape, or form. You guys are absolutely incredible. And, you know, I would tell you that Christian appreciated it, but he already did. So, you know, difficult time for him and his family. Yeah. So I'm glad you guys were there for him.
Yeah. So thank you again, everybody. You know, this is, like I said, we will move forward and power through. And this is a comedy show and we will laugh again. So a lot to look forward to, I promise, especially, you know, even in these difficult times, there's a lot of really fun stuff coming real soon for the Cooligan. So you'll be excited to, you know, get to see all of that. But let's get to our interview with Lutz Fannin Steele. I mean, one of my favorite names to say out loud. It's great. He is. There's no way you're going to finish this interview and be like, man, I really didn't like that Lutz Fannin Steele. It's impossible. The dude.
There's no boring in this man's life. It's absolutely great. And by the way, the stuff he told us off microphone is wild.
This guy needs a film made about him. Because
you wouldn't believe it. Honestly, it's like, what is that? Catch me if you can type shit.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You ain't going to believe it.
There's literally stuff that we might have to just leave for the Patreon because I think it will cause it like an international incident if we just said it publicly.
Bro, he would be arrested by Interpol for questioning if we released the things he's told us.
For real. Soccer and football has brought this man all over the world in ways you would never even imagine. So we talk a lot about it.
You know that part in Forrest Gump where he's like in those pictures with like the president?
Right.
Like the Dalai Lama. That's Lutz, bro.
Right. But these, you know, Lutz is not photoshopped into any of these photos.
No.
He was actually there with everybody.
You remember I showed you that picture once of Putin pretending to be like a dad when Ronald Reagan went to Russia?
I don't remember.
He was like a KGB guy, but he was like, right. He was like pretending to be a dad of a family, welcoming the president as he got off the plane.
I can see that. Yeah.
That's Lutz, bro. He's like, oh my God, he was there the whole time, dude.
So fascinating, dude. Yes, we filmed this we recorded this in Minnesota. Shout out to St. Louis City, who obviously they will be in MLS in 2023. But shout out to them for, you know, setting this up for us. Shout out to MLS for you being like, yo, y'all need to, Lutz, you need to talk to these guys.
Yeah.
So I was really, really kind to them. So
that was really cool. And it became the homie after this.
So here it is. Here's our interview with Lutz Fannin Steele of St. Louis City SC.
We've said this before. I'll say it again. Legends only, bro.
Exactly. It's MLS All-Star Week. All right. It's a couple hours before the MLS All-Star game.
Uh-huh.
So we, you know, the bar is constantly getting risen day to day.
Bro, every time we speak to someone, we're just like, I can't believe we get a chance to speak to these people. And actually, this is the second time we speak to this gentleman to my left.
Yes.
At the time, we met on the Bundesliga trip. But now, the director of football?
Here?
Okay.
No, sporting director.
Sporting director.
Actually, you call it CSO, Chief Sporting Officer.
Right.
I still call myself sporting director. In Düsseldorf, when you met me, I was CEO, which is in a way from the field of work, it's just the same.
Yeah, you know what? Just give this guy an acronym.
Okay. Well, what's your business card say?
Pfeffenstiel?
Pfeffenstiel.
Pfeffenstiel. I said I was going to butcher it, buddy. I'm
trying. I mean, where do you find the F?
Huh?
Where do you find the F?
Doesn't your name start with like seven consonants?
No, there is just one silent F in it. You should put four F's in it.
You know what? Usually, whenever we have a guest with a possibly difficult to pronounce name, I usually handle it.
This was
wildly irresponsible. And I blame myself for letting him even do it.
I mean, everybody so far who called me officially Pfeffenstiel was in trouble.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Well, now I guess I got to do laps. I don't know if this works. I'm out of the academy. What happens now?
No, this is an exciting time because we'll talk. I want to talk about the where we originally met, but obviously the sporting director for St. Louis City, the new MLS team that's coming into the league. What year? When?
2023.
So next year.
Just around the corner. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's coming close, and we've been doing our show since 2015. So we've seen a lot of these new clubs.
Mm-hmm. So you were only 12 years old by then.
I was
72.
I was 12, but I was still wearing diapers. That's okay. I had a lot of issues. So we've seen a lot of new clubs come into the league. Whether Minnesota United, Atlanta United, Nashville. So we've sort of, I don't know if we're veterans now when we started focusing on the league, obviously NYCFC had just started. So everybody gets annoyed at the new club, right? Because they think they're big shots and stuff like that. But it's starting to feel like St. Louis might arrive as big shots already. The interest and energy in the local huge market does feel incredibly genuine. So my first question to you is, what made St. Louis the project that you wanted to be a part of?
Yeah, let me just circle back there a second. We're not the big shots. We don't want to be the big shots. We actually just the opposite. We everybody's club. We want to be a community-driven club. I only signed players so far which are not big-time Charlies. We will stick that way. So we want to be what we are, which is a Midwestern club where we know where we are from. Well, I'm from Germany, but
yeah, right. Yeah, no, your accent says Midwest.
Midwest Germany.
Yeah, Midwest Germany.
But it's important that philosophy or that values, stick with us. And that's how we build the club from day one, from scratch. You guys still know me when I was in Düsseldorf. The COVID hit us. I made the decision to leave Düsseldorf or the Bundesliga. I just wanted something else. I agreed to go to England into the Premier League, and then still COVID, and then there was this first talk with the ownership here in St. Louis, and after hearing what the project is about, the tradition of football or of soccer here in the city, it's for me the most exciting project. I don't like the word project, but it is the most exciting project in the world, because
right,
starting a club from scratch with a very serious, genuine ownership, which really supports everything in a city where people just so full of life and desire for right football. I mean, can't be anything better. It's like I can put 30 years of professional football experience as a player, as a coach, as a sporting director, whatever, coaching instructor, I tried it all.
Yeah.
I can put all that and also the experience of six continents into that. What was good? What was bad? What did I like? What did I pick up in Hoffenheim? Or also, what did I find out from clubs who did wrong things?
Right.
Not to repeat that mistakes.
Right.
So I got a lot of experience on that, and now put it all together in St. Louis. It's unbelievable fun so far in the first 2 years.
Yeah.
What was it though? Because you have you are the record holder for playing for the most clubs in the world.
Nah, that's the record rumor. I'm the record holder for being the only one playing on all six FIFA continents.
Six FIFA continents.
Right, right.
That's much cooler, man, than...
What I did. I mean, look, your Wikipedia is long. I'm not going to lie to you, buddy. You've been to a lot of places. But that's actually, I think, part of the reason why it's so intriguing to see you now at this point in your career where you're sort of leading the charge. I remember when we spoke in Dusseldorf, you were credited with either being the one who discovered Bobby Firmino or helping discover... Bobby Firmino. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of my discovery. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But, take your credit.
But but you never do anything. I mean, that's same as how I run my sporting department here. You never do anything by yourself, and you're never responsible for something which was very good or when you did something wrong.
Yeah,
we are a team.
Well, see, you're different than me because I take full credit for anything that works out, and I deflect any responsibility. Yeah,
just take it away from him.
Yeah. Christian really messed up there with saying your name earlier. But, see how that works?
But I so we really discovered him as a really young guy, you know, and then obviously moving him, seeing that development in Hoffenheim, moving him on to Liverpool, where he just had an unbelievable success. Having said that, last weekend I was in Munich for ESPN or in Frankfurt doing Bayern against Frankfurt and Mané playing that first game. So I spoke after the game with an interview with Mané, and I spoke with him before the game as well. So we spoke about Roberto, and you know, I said, you and Salah, you were really lucky because that guy gave you all the space. He took a lot of work from you, and the two of you scored like crazy. And knowing Mané being the nicest man in the world,
yeah,
he just was smiling and said, like, yeah, he was brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just, yeah, I mean, Firmino is still one of the guys, obviously, which I follow because it was that typical Hoffenheim product, I would call, bringing in a player pretty cheap, selling him for a lot of money, but developing. Coming from the second division in Brazil, becoming a full Brazilian international.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But so what did you, and I know you're talking about wanting to develop this club as like an everyman club. Do you think, because I know St. Louis has a storied history with soccer in the U.S., but it's been a while since the youth have been developed to the point of getting to professional teams outside of the few that have gone, like Tim Ream, I believe, is from St. Louis. He's out in Fulham. Do you think you're going to be able to find those gems like Bobby Firmino in an area like St. Louis? And how, you've been there 2 years. Are we starting to put in the pieces to help develop the next Bobby Firmino?
It's a good question and at the same time a very bad question.
Okay.
You want to know why?
Of course. By the way, that's one of the most German things I've ever heard on the show.
I mean, it's a good question because, of course, we wanna try to find the next superstar.
Yes,
but that's not really realistic because the way Roberto is playing is a Brazilian player.
Right.
The way the kids and the talents are in the Midwest, coming back to that, it's a little bit of a different kind of basic talent set they have.
Right.
We don't have the most technical players. We also don't have lots of players with Hispanic background.
Right.
You know, like you having lots of Mexican talent, so lots of players from South and Middle Central America in California or Florida. We don't have that. So we have mostly kids from the region there,
right,
where the population is differently structured.
Yeah.
And that is where the talents we have,
right,
they are a little bit different. So I say they have more the Midwestern typical attributes to be a player. And that's, again, hardworking, modest, really giving you lots of problems, be uncomfortable to play against. And my goal is to create one pressing monster after the other. Mm-hmm. Our game is based on pressing and counter-pressing. So do I need the technical superstar who can keep up the ball and does everything with it? It's nice to have, but we need guys who work as a unit. And, you know, there is always, I mean, you two are Americans. So
yes,
you like the word DP, designated player.
Huge
fans.
It's a nice word.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in that. I believe in the DT, designated team.
Okay.
That's what we're trying to build.
Right. I think Miami and Inter Miami try to do that. Have a whole D designated player team. Didn't work out for them. I think that's actually a great way to put it. You want to create a pressing monster, because one of the questions I want to ask you is, you did play, you played in Vancouver, so you've played in MLS. You played in six continents. I heard it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
What is the American style of playing? We know what the Brazilian style is. We know what the German style is. What the hell is the American style? And is there an American style?
There is. I think it really, again, it depends. America or the United States, it's in Europe compared. It's a continent. It's not a country.
Right.
So imagine now you guys were in Düsseldorf. 1 hour to the right, you're going to Holland.
Right.
2 hours to the left, you're going to Poland. So it's lots of different countries, lots of different styles. So everybody has, I would call it, a bit of a different playing mentality. Styles are similar. Here, because of that lots of different cultures living here together.
Right.
You have in different region, different ways of playing. Now, if I think back at my playing time, Portland was very direct, a bit English. Minnesota now plays, like Adrian, a bit more with a British idea.
Right.
You're going to Houston or you're going to Dallas, you have a lot of South American influence where automatically you have more ball possession. So it really varies in the different places. So you find here literally everything. But the American youth game, which is a model I never heard of in my life. I mean, I did, but I just couldn't see how it goes, which is the so-called pay-to-play model.
Right, right, right.
Is for me one of the most weirdest things I've ever seen, because football is the game for everybody. Mm. It needs to be diverse. It needs to be all-inclusive. Everybody needs to be able to play that
game.
Let's
take that thought process forward. It's the game for everybody. And imagine everybody paid. Now we're making money. Welcome to America,
Capitalism 101.
We're making money, buddy.
And that's where I came in.
Where we need you.
But obviously a lot of academies now are free, which is incredible. And we're seeing the fruits of that labor in developing the next step. And MLS wants to be a selling league. So do you think, being the chief soccer officer,
say sporting
director,
how the stocks for St. Louis has
the vice president of soccer, do you think St. Louis could be that next hub where Europe are going to start plucking talent from St. Louis?
Yeah, I think we can be, because we have as a clear goal, we want to have the best academy system, development system in the States. 10 years ago, I would have said, I'm pretty sure we can do that. Now you see some of the academies doing some great job. I mean, obviously Dallas produces lots of players. But looking even on the other side to Philadelphia, the numbers of homegrown players, the numbers of talents who coming from their own region is really fantastic. So there is lots of good things happening in recent years. And coming back to that, we want to be also a difference maker in our region. So we want to, all our football education should be free, and not just the academy, which is the top of the young players. We talk about also going down in the system, community U7 up to under 13. We want to be out there and give kids which don't have the financial possibilities to play that at the higher level, to give them the opportunity to learn to play, but also learn how to love the game and actually be member of a team. You know, we have talent programs, we have community programs, we call it City for Future programs. So we have lots of different ways of get the community engaged, to go into areas where there is not the big finances, but to give kids that opportunity and be as diverse as possible, be as inclusive as possible. That's the big goal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're doing it now since a long time. That is one of the things our ownership is extremely, extremely proud about and happy about, that we do that. So in our case, it's not just all about winning games or developing the next pro. It is a little bit to also, I would call it, create leaders, create good people. Mm-hmm. And that is that values you really can give to children being out there. Now, you guys will say, like, what's wrong with that guy? He's taking care of the professional team. But, yeah, I take care literally of all the three things, community, academy, and the pro team. And what is more important, yes, everybody thinks on the short term it's just about the pro team. But, no, we really focus on that, bringing up good kids, involving them in football, and trying to live like as role models, and also signing players for the first team who are role models for that kids. So
a lot of responsibilities.
The guys I signed for the pro team, every single one so far, I made a lot of effort that we do get the right characters.
Right. That's great.
Right. And it's interesting, just because, you know, there have been a couple, either presidents of certain clubs or sporting directors that have come over from Europe. Like, the one name that comes to mind is Darren Eales, who just left Atlanta United to go to Newcastle. But when he got to Atlanta United, he kind of, you know, he was, I believe, at Tottenham and brought a different philosophy. And the one thing I want to ask about that is, coming from Germany, it seems like you mentioned FC Dallas. FC Dallas seems to have a private plane that goes directly to Bayern because they have a really good, at least a good relationship for sending players over there. So what is it about maybe the American style of play or the American player that maybe fits so well in Bundesliga or just in Germany overall? Because I think we've seen a lot of really good examples of that.
Yeah, I think, you're right. The American players, they do adapt very quick in Germany. I think it has to do that the football in Germany is very athletic. And American children growing up, kids in their teens, they're really blessed with athleticism, which comes through your education with lots of different sports. Right. So the multi-sport has also some advantage. Once you have to make the choice, what do I do? Then I think now you need to make that decision as an American kid pretty early. Where do I want to succeed as a pro? Otherwise, you're good in everything, but you're not great in anything. Mm-hmm. And
I think that was my problem.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, he looked at me like you were best at lunch. I went pro at lunch.
Okay. So given that maybe it's German style of play or German philosophy in the football culture, when it comes to bringing that to the game itself or the team itself, like you're talking about all these responsibilities, because it sounds like there's a certain level of pride in the fact that you almost get to create this from the ground up. I mean, as a player and being on in front offices and building teams, to get to not just build a first team and build literally everything from the ground up, what does that feel like for you personally to be so emotionally invested in a club like this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's different, you know. I mean, I had that same experience in Hoffenheim where it also a little bit different, but you can compare it because the club came from Division 7 and went threw up directly into the pro level, and then we build it from a smaller team in the Bundesliga into a Champions League team who played against Man City and Liverpool.
Right.
So that's like where the infrastructure was planned, the stadium was planned, everything was new. So it's a little bit that what I do feel now again. But to be fair, being here as the first guy in the sports and starting everything and having that great communication with the ownership to really, you know, build step by step. And it feels a little bit like my baby, like my child, you know. I mean, also the trainings facility, which was planned by flying over to Europe, watch two or three training centers, bring some architects, really building that from every thought, like for months, how do we really make that into the best facility in North America? What can we do different? Not just being high-tech, modern, and special, but also putting in certain features which nobody has. So I decided, you know, I call it the carrot and the donkey, or the carrot and the rabbit, whatever principle, that the youth is the changing room of the youngsters coming every year closer to the pro team. And once you're there at the U17, you're looking right into the pro facility, which is just a big glass window, which every day should motivate you. I can be there if I put the right work in. We have the same changing room as Manchester City. Round changing rooms for pro team, which gives you that special feeling of being a team belonging together. The Knights of the Round Table, you know, so nice one. Yeah. So that's kind of things we put in there. So yeah, it is like a child, something I wake up thinking about it, and you know, after putting in 18 solid hours, I fall into bed and I still think, okay, I'm already looking forward to wake up and see what can we do the next day.
Right.
So it is very unique. This is not a job. This is not work. It's a calling. You just you feel like I need to be there and I need to put the extra yard in, because it's that what people in St. Louis want, and we can make the difference. We can make it special. And so far, I think so good.
Okay. When you look for a coach, do you try to find a coach that has the same philosophy as you?
I already hired a coach.
Oh.
But I was saying, when you were looking for
him. Of course. I mean, the thing is, like, we simply hired the coach on the way we're going to play.
Okay, not the other way around. Their style and all that.
Yeah, I mean, Bradley Carnell was literally the chosen one because, number one, I know him from Germany when he played there.
Right.
Number two, he made his first coaching license where, coincidentally, I was his instructor. Mm. And I always kept on following his coaching career when he went to the Red Bulls and stuff. He is the thinking of pressing, counter-pressing, but with a little bit of touch from Hoffenheim, like Nagelsmann, where you want to play also, play some football. That's Bradley Carnell. So he is exactly that guy for that position. And we know we had hundreds of people applying for that job, big names, Champions League coaches, guys who won the European Championship, like really big guys from all over the world. But again, it's not about what you have been in the past.
Yeah.
I want to have people around me which are young, hungry, and motivated. That's how we sign players. We signed one player over 30, which was Bürki as a goalkeeper, mm-hmm. which is still young as a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
The rest are all on the younger end. And that being hungry and trying to make the next step and not saying, well, I have already achieved everything, this is like the end of my career. That's not how I believe we want to show ourselves to the public and what we want to stand for. And the coach plays a major role in that. So I wanted to have a nice and nippy coach, you know, who is out there to put in the extra mile and just work hard and play hard. And that's Brady Cannell.
Okay. Wow. You mentioned real quick, you mentioned Roman Bürki. He, weird enough, one thing I've noticed when I started watching Bundesliga and on Instagram, for whatever reason, Roman Bürki has a ton of fan accounts. I don't know. I'm sure everybody's aware of this. He has fan accounts because apparently he's very handsome. So people just make...
Goalkeepers are usually very handsome.
Right, yeah, yeah. I got to be honest. I know how he feels. It's honestly a burden for me,
you know, with all the fan accounts. He has a lot of fan accounts. I made a lot of them. But.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. It's a lot of pictures of the posters you have on your wall.
Yes. Yeah. You brought in the right guy is all I'm saying.
So, we're going to sell tickets because of the goalkeeper, okay? That's what we're trying to say.
Usually, goalkeeper often, you know, neglected, forgotten, yeah. But no. This
one of the things I like about you is you talk a lot about the community and building, you know, the idea of a football team being more of a club and club being a part of the society. One of the things that signifies St. Louis to me, and I got to try it when I worked at the Helium out there at the comedy club. One of the things I got to try, which I think signifies St. Louis, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, is Emo's Pizza.
Have you heard of this?
Of course.
There's a cheese that was invented, I think, as punishment, and all of St. Louis has decided to eat this. It's called Provel, and it was invented by someone who I think hated St. Louis, to be honest with you. What are your thoughts on Emo's Pizza?
Before you answer, Alexis is a pizza expert and it's coming from a genuine place. Although critical, he does have a lot of experience when it comes to pizza.
It's not as bad as it is.
Okay. You know what? This man wants to sell tickets.
So let me get into the details. So when I came
break
here,
it down like you would a football
yeah,
map.
Yeah, when I came, let me analyze that. Yeah.
Can we get the telestrator with the
lines? Yeah. So no, I just put arrows in the screen.
Yeah.
So when I came here and I tried Emo's, it was, you know, it was like a nice kind of cheesy biscuit looking like a pizza,
uh-huh.
but also tasted special, unique, but it's definitely not bad, and I do eat it once in a while.
Okay.
Toasted ravioli. You probably heard about
deep
that as well.
Deep fried ravioli.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
We call it toasted ravioli.
Yeah.
They also special, never had them before. They're also pretty good, but again, you know, it is culture. But if you said you like pizza, right?
I love pizza.
So let me tell you this one thing. If you come to St. Louis, you have to go to a place called Dewey's.
Dewey's.
That is one of the best pizzas I ever ate in my life.
Okay.
And I spent lots of time in my life, even in Italy, where Dewey's is right up there.
Yeah. I mean, Italy doesn't make that great a pizza anyway. You got to come to New York.
Okay, yeah. It's a whole thing. But
that's where it comes from, guys. Yeah.
Barely. I can honestly, I'll break down the history of pizza if you want. We can get real technical.
Yeah, yeah.
I like more of a gag-impressing style pizza.
When it comes to that, your resume in football is Alexis is the equivalent in yes. pizza. So these are two, you know.
Titans of industry. I'm the chief pizza officer.
CPO.
Yes.
Okay.
I like to be more of the.
Let me make
director.
A call into the ownership because that's something which, especially with Emo's, maybe
yeah,
we could sort
something
we
out.
Yeah.
We've taken footballers on pizza tours and stuff like that.
I explain the history of pizza. I explain why it's baked that way.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's
yeah,
a lot of fun.
Okay, you know,
yeah,
just pitching some content ideas.
All right, we're just out here. We're out here trying to make the bag.
I think we. Look, Tommy, we've been on for a while. Thank thank you so much for joining us. It's been super.
That was it already.
That's it. We've been going half an hour.
Come on, man.
That was fast.
Unless you want, if you have anything else that you'd like to talk about, we'd be happy to discuss.
Actually, ask me some proper questions. I mean, we spoke about pizza now and stuff.
First of all, that's what I came here for. I don't know why.
You agreed to do this.
Yeah. We said we were comedians. Don't you dare expect anything. Actually, you know what? Let's talk about this. I'm an Arsenal fan. He's an Everton fan.
Yeah.
Have you kept up with Arsenal over the past few years?
I watch nearly every Premier League game. I'm sorry that you're an Everton fan, my friend. But I mean,
the English tell me that. The Germans tell me that.
To be fair, I actually have a soft spot for Pickford.
Okay.
It's like I said, goalkeepers are good looking. It's not always the case.
Yeah.
But he's definitely a good goalkeeper.
Oh, he's amazing.
I like him. And I mean, you know, Arsenal, I think that it's had a good transfer period.
Great.
It really could work. I mean, that's two of the teams which have such a big tradition. So they just, I got a bit worried for Everton if they really would have got relegated. I mean, even,
they
would even hurt me because I think they just belong there. And Arsenal, I think now they just have to have a good start and get things in order again because they have to play international football. There's no doubt about it.
Right. What I want to ask you is Arteta made a big point and he really put his neck on the line. He risked a lot by saying, I want to get everyone out of even the front office and the club, the first team, everywhere that doesn't really care about this badge. And he put himself on the line getting rid of what, as they all call, like dead weight. It took a while. You had to finish that before you can start the process of bringing in new players. You watching that as someone who's building a team from the ground up, do you see that and say you can really respect that, you appreciate that? How would you have handled that had you been given the situation he came in after Unai Emery?
No, I think what he did was the right thing because you called it dead weight. You know, it's if you're having a big squad, and I would call it basically the skeletons in the closet where the old coach brought it in. You know, there is too many players coming back from loan. Suddenly you have a squad of 30 guys and you only need 17. Mm-hmm. Then you have 13 guys who are not happy, 13 guys you are not happy about. What do you do with that? And that is, you need to make the clean cut. I call it a transition year. Sometimes that's the year when you have a bad season, when the fans are angry. Communicate it the right way, but you say you do it for a reason, and on the long term, the club benefits from it. You know, I'm good friends with Per Mertesacker.
Oh, I love
him. Which is doing the youth academy there, so we are still in touch. I had Reese Nelson. You probably still know him. I know. Yeah. I had him. I took him to Hoffenheim. Eddie Nketiah nearly came to Düsseldorf, so you would have been very happy, but I missed out and he went to Leeds. One of the worst days of my life, to be honest, but okay. And I think he took a bit of a risk, but I think on the long term, it will pay off.
Okay, you know, now that you mentioned some of those players, I remember reading Arsene Wenger's book, and he told a story. He sold a couple stories about players that he missed out on, who regretted. Everybody always asks this to a lot of either coaches or football directors.
Arsene Wenger had a couple. He barely just
this, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's everybody feels this way, but this is something I absolutely love hearing of like the what ifs. What if this player ended up at this club? And usually the people involved with making those decisions also have those same questions. So I'll ask you, what were some of those players that got away that you really wanted?
To be fair, in my time in Hoffenheim, because we had a different kind of way of operating, mm-hmm. we didn't go for any big names. We went for the Firminos or for the Joel Lintons, where get them cheap and sell them much more expensive. Kevin Folland is another guy.
Wow.
You have Amiri, Demirbay. You know, for example, there I have to say in Hoffenheim, we did have a good financial background, but we went another way. So we never really missed out on anything, because the only one which I would say which was a bit of a shambles was Haaland, because he was offered in Germany and most of the German clubs, but then we all knew him and everybody wanted him.
Yeah.
But he was just at this moment too young and too expensive from Molde, and then he ended up in Salzburg. Yeah. They went for it. It paid off. So that is the only one where I would say, should we have invested that extra money? Yes, when it comes to the football. No, when it comes to the structure, because you don't want to blow up your youth system with one player. Right. So overall, it's better to stay to that what you stand for.
Mm-hmm.
In Düsseldorf, I never missed out on anything because I had no money. So okay, here you go. I mean, I was just like, who else could I loan, please? So we ended up with like lots of loan players, which you know, the chances there that you basically that it's just a question of time. You survive year one, you survive year two, maybe you survive year three. If you're not able to spend a similar amount than position 15 and 16, sooner or later, you will get relegated. Mm. It's just the law.
Yeah.
What is it called? The law?
I have no idea. Murphy's law?
Murphy's law.
Come on, you know that. You know,
I was thinking law of diminishing returns.
No, yeah, Murphy's law.
Alexis doesn't really abide by any laws. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the chief stupidity officer, apparently.
So that you normally do that. So, and now here, I really like touch wood. Every player so far we wanted, we got.
Okay.
That's great.
And again, I think we're going for realistic targets. Now, I could jump about and say, well, I want a player for 27 million from Argentina. No, I don't think that is the lake we're going to fish in. Mm-hmm. You know, I have an idea what we want, what positions we want, what kind of characters we want. And we got that, guys. And thanks God that, you know, like now the European market and the American market, it got a bit closer together. So lots of the MLS clubs, they more tending to go to Latin America.
Yeah.
I decided I go to Europe because I knew we can afford European players from the Bundesliga because they still feel COVID.
Right.
And the guys we wanted, we got, you know, and we got, for example, Joachim Nielsen, a Swedish international, which had 6-7 offers from the Bundesliga, but we got him. Birki had offers from the Premier League and from Spain, and we got him because he believed in St. Louis. He believed in the project. And well, I knew these guys from the Bundesliga. It makes me easier to explain everything.
Of course,
you know? And so, yeah, I mean, it's but yeah, Haaland would be the one.
All right.
And the one which is, but luckily it wasn't me, but Lewandowski was also offered to all Bundesliga clubs and nobody took him.
Wow.
And then he ended up in Dortmund and the rest is history. That had nothing to do with his level. It's just nobody really knew by then. You know, nobody.
Yeah.
He was like,
he was not really that well known. But after all, I mean, he was the guy.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, and now he's in a club that may not be able to register him as a player.
So he may be being offered to a Bundesliga club yet again. Hey, St. Louis, he's on a free. If they can't register him, he's free on Saturday. Did you know that?
Yeah, I read that today as well, which is crazy, you know. I mean, yeah, but the Lewandowski story, I had this talk, a long talk on ESPN on the weekend because I believe, and I'm one of the few guys actually who is brave enough to say it, to have Lewandowski is brilliant. But the way things went in Munich with 1 year left on the contract and getting Mané in, then I tell you what will happen. Give us a call next year and see if I was right or not. I believe very strongly that Bayern Munich will score nearly as many goals as last year, but they will have 5 to 6 scorers with high numbers. Sané, Gnabry, Mané, Müller, Coman, instead of having one guy with 50 goals.
Right.
That's my opinion.
As an Arsenal fan, I really miss Serge Gnabry. But here's what I want to ask you. Bayern Munich winning the championship so many years in a row, and it's looking like it's going to happen for the 11th time in a row. Is that good for the Bundesliga?
Of course not. You know, they asked me what is my wish for this season, and I say I would like that the Easter Bunny is not there yet when Bayern Munich wins the championship, which is somewhere in April, which is like 6 weeks before it stops.
Right.
So no Easter Bunny, please. Yeah. So I would like that it stays exciting till at least 2-3 match days before the end. If they win it again because they're the best team, fair enough, but try to stay really on their back. And I think Leverkusen has so much potential. Dortmund has a lot of potential. Leipzig has a lot of potential. So there is these three clubs who really can go after them. And so far, whenever Bayern Munich had a weak period, the other guys had a weak period as well. So it was like jinxed.
Yeah.
And maybe that changes this year. Having said that, winning in Frankfurt 6-1,
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a wishful thinking.
Yeah. Might as well get the Easter Bunny out now if you want that thing.
I mean, even the first goal, was it Kimmich just through the smoke and getting scoring the goal? I mean, they look incredibly sharp already.
I actually got one quick last question. Would you put Zach Steffen as the starter for the U.S. men's national team?
Well, you know, he was just mean.
All right, that's why I asked.
Düsseldorf. I really like Zach. I think he has a lot to give. I mean, he's very modern. He's good at his feet. I think he fits very well into Greg's build style. And the answer is yes. And the reason is Turner will not be number one.
No.
Stefan went to Middlesbrough, had a great start. I think the last games were not that good. But if he plays till the winter, he plays his 17, 18 games in the championship, then I believe he will start. Right. And I think also he will have the confidence to start, because now Matt will be on the bench. He will hardly play any games, maybe a few in the cup, and then throwing him into the World Cup has maybe a certain risk. But each way, Turner, really good goalkeeper. Stefan, a really good goalkeeper. I don't think you can go wrong with any of them. Knowing Zach on a personal level, and even saying that he's my friend, I really wish him all the best, and that he plays the World Cup and does well.
Okay. Nice. All right. Last question. Okay. One more.
Okay.
Each of you, one more.
Okay.
Yeah.
I really like interviewing.
No.
Then I ask you some questions.
Okay, please. Feel free.
I'm going to keep your PR person here all day. We've spoken to several general managers in MLS, and your introduction to the financial structure of MLS and building a team and GAM and TAM and designated player and all
that
stuff.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'm sure you were somewhat familiar with it, but when you actually saw the book in front of you of all the rules, was it overwhelming? Was it jarring? Do you have someone to specifically tell you everything, how everything works? How did you ingest all of that?
Everything what you just mentioned, it is a lot to read and a lot to work with. It looks more complicated than it is, but you do need good people next to you. So our financial guy, it supports me there a lot. We also have an administrative guy. Hello, Peter. Hello, Matt. which are just really having my back there, which looking into all, and that we basically updated every day what we have to do and how much we have left and where we should spend and what exactly are the rules, how much GAM we have to put here. And so it is interesting. It's much more complicated than it is in Germany, because in Germany I just get it if I want it.
Yeah.
And if I don't have enough money, I can't get it. Yeah. like here you can find ways with trades and GAM. So it is, I'm familiar with, I always liked American sports. I'm a big hockey fan and things like that. So I always, similar kind of rulings, also with trades and with opportunities, I would call it. So, yeah, I like it. It's challenging. It's also makes me to look a little bit onto the game, especially on the business side, from another angle. So yeah, I like it. Sometimes of course I'm swearing a little bit. but overall it's good.
And I'll just add to that the comparison of I've heard about owners in Bundesliga kind of be frustrated with the 50+1 rule because they would like more autonomy and more be able to control the roster a little bit. Bit more, the comparison of the 50+1 rule and those restrictions versus MLS and its
single entity,
single entity and its restrictions and challenges. Is there? I'm not gonna ask like, would you prefer one over the other? But what are the biggest maybe differences or nuances between the two?
You said it very nicely, a little bit wrong, but very nicely. In Germany, the 50+1. It's completely the opposite, because I'll give you an example. Hoffenheim is the only club where an owner, like Dietmar Hopp, is an owner because he took that team in the 7th or 8th or 9th division. So it's his hometown team. They gave him the opportunity. Then you have teams who are owned by big companies. Volkswagen with Wolfsburg. Bayer with Bayer Leverkusen. Obviously, RB Leipzig with Red Bull. So you have that company teams, which are, again, the normal football club like Düsseldorf, they just don't like these clubs because they are different. They're not following the traditions. Traditions are great to have, but you need to grow. I always put it in an example. In a fan talk back in Düsseldorf, I said, 100 years ago, you were riding on horses. Now you're driving a car. So the world keeps on developing.
Right.
So must be the professional sports. You can't say anymore. 1984, we were in the Champions League or Euro Cup Winners' Cup, whatever, final in Barcelona.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You cannot say that anymore. That doesn't the past doesn't help you. You need to evolve and you need to grow with the way the world of sports develops. And for me now, having that pleasure in Hoffenheim with Dietmar Hopp was a great experience. Having the opposite in Düsseldorf, where you need to go to the board of advisors, advisory board, 9 people who they're all over the place and you can't get hold of them to buy a player. And in the end, once you do have all 9, the player is gone, slows you down the process. And I'm not talking about selling your soul to investors. I'm talking about keep the club financially
solvent.
You can react quick. Now being here, having a really good relationship with the owners, being basically 2 offices down, so if something is hot, something needs to be done immediately, I can knock on the door and we get it solved. So this makes my life so much easier. So to keep the answer short, much better to do it that way.
Okay. So last question is, or last thing is, you said you were going to have questions for us. What would you like to ask us?
Yeah, I want to do, can you do a little bit of a stand-up comedian?
yeah, if you buy a ticket.
Okay.
2 drink minimum.
I want to know, what are you talking about?
I mostly talk about, recently I've been talking a lot about being married to a nurse who had to, you know, in New York City during COVID and
so
stuff.
So you married to a nurse?
Yeah.
And I just got married about
to a nurse.
I just got married 8 weeks ago to a nutritionist. Okay. So I've been talking about that.
And I've been married for 15 years.
So you just keep on talking about your wife.
No, it's not all, but that's
not all. A lot of it is to show you how stupid I am through the eyes of my wife, because she's a gem,
right.
You know. And I'm more of the really cheap ring holding up that gem.
We talk about our lives and you know, whether it's career, work, or in soccer and travels.
You're doing that full time.
Yeah.
So you're full time stand-up comedians.
Yes. And we have a show about soccer. Yeah, that is our.
I mean, I know that. I hope you have a soccer show.
One of those 2 things right now. Can you guess which one?
We've spoken about soccer, and I think we've made you laugh a couple of times. So I feel like we're doing it. We're doing our job.
As I mentioned, I did the Helium in St. Louis. It was the first time I've been in St. Louis. Right. It was a lot of fun.
So you come to a show. I mean,
my daughter, she studies in New York City.
Okay.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, she's like in
NYU?
No, she's in the New York Film Academy.
Okay.
Oh, very nice. Yeah.
Awesome.
So right in town. So next time I'm there, a visitor, I will
shoot us a message.
So if in case you don't have a show, then you have to do a private one for me.
I will have a show.
There'll be plenty. But you know
what? I'm going to tell my wife, sorry, I can't go to dinner. I got to go to this guy's hotel room and do a show.
I can ask you this.
I promise. I promise it's not weird. Yes, he's German. How'd you know?
Well, one thing about Germans, I don't know if it's a fallacy or not, but the German, people say Germans don't like to laugh. They're not particularly funny.
Hey, listen, we are pretty miserable, to be fair.
Okay. You don't understand sarcasm. As a culture.
But look, it's like that. I can't explain it about Germany. As more southern you get, as kinder and funnier, maybe a little bit crumpy you can get. Yeah. So I'm from the deep, deep south. I'm in general a very funny guy.
Okay.
But if you're going to the north, people are more stick to themselves. When they want to have a laugh, they hide in the basement for an hour.
No one knows they laugh.
You can't show weakness amongst others.
Yeah. But it also has to do a little bit with language. So the German language sounds to your ears extremely hard.
Yeah.
Yes. So for example, if you say, I give you one a nice example. If you talk about a little bug who flies and you say butterfly, it's a nice butterfly. It sounds nice.
Sounds beautiful.
In German, it's called Schmetterling. And that sounds
like grandpa died.
Yeah,
he caught a schmetterling.
It sounds worse. So the language, even when we're talking nice and soft to each other, it sounds to you like it's fighting.
Yeah, it's very harsh. It's a very harsh language.
It's, you know, I mean, yeah.
Okay, we'll put.
Like even we call him a ham hock. You just say it's a pork knuckle. You know what I mean? It's such a, yo, chill, dude. I don't need to know
why is so literal.
Y'all gotta relax, Germany.
Lutz Fadenstiel. Thank you so much.
He can say my name and you call him.
Yeah. He does the names.
I'm the names guy.
I'm the beauty of the show, Lutz.
This has been an absolute honor. Look, obviously 2023 St. Louis, hopefully we can go out to a game, or maybe if St. Louis plays NYCFC in Yankee Stadium. I know you're going to be excited to play in a baseball stadium.
Okay. Your dream as a young boy.
You forgot I'm coming into New York and you have to do the stand-up.
Yes, of course.
We will make you laugh. I promise. pizzas. You're more than welcome. You know, we'll take you to pizza that doesn't have poisonous cheese.
I bring you some emo.
Please don't. I guarantee you they won't let you in the airport. They'll be like, no, that's gotta go in a band, dude. TSA is like, get it out of there.
But best of luck, you know, building this squad, building this club. Honestly, it's an honor to get to talk to you again. You know, seeing you in Germany and then seeing you here. I know you're gonna do a great job with the club, man.
Thanks so much.
All right,
send us a kit.
We don't have them yet.
Yeah, I know. When you do.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.